You know, most students at John Abbott College are on summer break, but the campus is still buzzing. Nearly 100 human rights activists and educators are there. They're gathering until the end of next week. It's the 40th annual International Human Rights Training Program in Canada. It's run by Equitas. CBC Home Run's Brian Lapouze was there this week, and right now he joins me in studio. Hello, Brian.
Hi, Sue.
So what was it like?
Well, it's like you said, it's still buzzing.
Okay, so those in the English introductory stay here. The other ones follow me and we'll go to 174. Thank you.
How many languages are there? Like English and French and...
Oh, it's bilingual, yeah. It respects Quebec's official language.
Of course it does.
I don't think English. Anyways, it's just being there for a few hours, meeting people from all around the world, it really changes your perspective on things.
What do you mean?
Well, I realize how much I've taken my Canadian education for granted.
Mm-hmm.
For example, that sound of chattering we just listened to a moment ago is right before workshops on LGBTQ+I issues. Participants were split into two groups, one introductory group, one advanced group. I sat down with the introductory group, and it started with a mother and a man telling their individual stories. The mother's lesbian, the man is gay, and here's a list of questions that came from the audience. Are your children also gay? How did you make children? How did you realize you were gay? How do you meet your sexual desires? And I mean, me personally, I had sex ed in elementary and high school. What I didn't have is an upbringing into a culture or country where homosexuality is illegal.
Yeah. Well, I guess isn't that the whole point of this workshop? People sharing their own perspectives?
Exactly. So it's activists learning from activists, educators learning from educators. And, their individual experiences differ largely from the because the participants come from 45 different countries.
Wow.
In some places, fighting for LGBTQ rights is completely clandestine. It's mm-hmm. underground work. In other places, it may not be illegal, but there's still this long trudge towards getting government policies, laws to protect the rights of LGBTQ+ communities, or even just to gain social acceptability. That's the case for Maciel Moreno Rodriguez. She's from Nicaragua. She's lesbian, and her coming out was not easy.
First time I said I was a lesbian, I was 11 years old. I tell my mom I like girls, and she said, that's not true. And I never talk about that again till I was 21 years old, and I had a girlfriend. And I say my mom again, Mom, she is my girlfriend, and she doesn't believe me. But nothing happened. It's something that all people know, but nobody talk about that. For me, it's been really, really difficult to say it and not feel that people is accepting me. That's why I start with my organization, because I need to people know that lesbian exists in Nicaragua.
So rest assured, everything is going well with Maciel and her mother now. That was 4 years ago. Maciel is a group called Casa de los Colores, House of Colors, and the goal is to educate people in the community about LGBTQ issues, and if necessary, provide safe homes for people who get kicked out of their families.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that was really moving, her story. So I know that they, at this conference, there are a whole bunch of different sort of human rights that we talk about, and it's hard not to think, of course, of the rights of displaced people. I know this is one of the big issues globally. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees saying we're seeing the highest levels of displacement on record. So I'm guessing that's something that this conference touched upon.
Absolutely. The struggle of displaced people, it's a struggle for resources and services. It's, people get displaced, they find a host country. But even then, you may not have access to jobs. There's no free education for your children. In many cases, you need a refugee status card to get services.
Mm-hmm.
And this is on top of fleeing from poverty, environmental disasters, war. And then what happens to your mental health? I met Ashley Ko Jokming. She works with health equity initiatives in Malaysia. It's a group that provides mental health services to refugees for free.
The majority of refugees and asylum seekers, they're extremely stressed. They have anxiety. They're depressed. A lot of them have PTSD. A lot of them have panic attacks, even living day-to-day life for them. And they feel that they can't breathe, that they have heart palpitations when they wake up in the morning, they can't sleep. It's really terrible. And it's the things they go through every single day, but they do not know what's wrong with them. And they don't know how to cope with it either.
Ashley's group provides access to counselors and psychiatrists if need be, all for free, as I said. And, you know, she says that often people just need somebody to talk to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I know that another topic on the agenda was the Rwandan genocide, because, of course, human rights work, that is a big part of it. And the anniversary this year, 25 years, which is hard to imagine.
That's right. So the Rwandan genocide, the killings were triggered in 1994 after the plane of President Juvenal Habyarimana was shot down on April 6th. Today, Rwanda is in the middle of its 100-day commemoration. I met Jean-Baptiste Hategekimana. He works with Never Again Rwanda. Jean-Baptiste was 9 years old at the time of the genocide.
My dad woke up, he used to sleep a bit earlier. He woke up and told us that a scandal has happened. We asked, what is that? He said, the president of Rwanda is dead. So when we went out, we could see fire around us because we were in the refugee camp, and we could see people burning houses. Then it was the night. The following day, we could see fire almost everywhere around us, and we could see the militia with the machetes, with these traditional tools, going to kill people, to kill Tutsi.
Wow, oh, that brings me back to such terrible times. I mean, 25 years ago, is there, like, what kind of work is there still left for people like Jean-Baptiste in Rwanda?
So I'll give you a bit of a roundabout answer to that question. I asked Jean-Baptiste, at some point I asked him about his ethnicity, and he answered, "My family was not targeted." Hmm. And I'm like, why is this guy not giving me a straightforward answer? And then he said this.
The government that perpetrated the genocide identified people by mentioning their ethnicities in their identity. But for now, with the unit and reconciliation policy, we don't have to call people by their ethnicities. We have only one identity of Rwandan, no Munyarwanda.
Jean-Baptiste's work is very sensitive. Rwandans carry the trauma from the genocide, but through open community discussions in safe spaces, Jean-Baptiste hopes people will heal, and the hope is with the youth and in making sure that they grow up to be respectful leaders.
Wow, amazing. Must have been amazing. I know it was amazing for you because you came out like, wow, that was life-changing, you know, to be a fly on the wall. But I'm wondering about the delegates that are there. Like, what kind of training school in Montreal provide for human rights educators from all these different, you know, backgrounds and experiences?
Right. Well, everyone I spoke to were all very impressed to be here in Montreal and to be at the training school. They're all amazed at the opportunity to meet human rights educators from all over the world. They exchange knowledge, experience, advice. At the end of the day, it gives them hope and it strengthens their convictions.
Great. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
That was CBC Home Run's Brian Lapous. He was at the International Human Rights Training Program, which is being held by ECTAS at John Abbott College, and it goes on until June 28th.